WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson joins us with an update on the legislature's budget writing committee meeting today. Sean, good to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, we're 2 months past due on this budget, but it looks like things are starting to fall into place. Is that right?
It sounds like it. I mean, the Republicans who run the legislature's budget committee have kind of given themselves some wiggle room tonight. They're not 100% saying we're going to be done tonight, but it sounds like that's what they're shooting for with pretty much everything. The Foxconn bill, the transportation budget that's held things up for so much, and then the rest of the budget, some stuff that we haven't talked about for quite a while because, you know, it's been a while since they've debated it.
Let's start with Foxconn there. What do we know about what they're arriving at with that incentive package?
So they're going to pass a Foxconn bill that is largely similar to what we've been talking about for the last month or so, largely similar to what passed the State Assembly. There's a new provision in there that we haven't seen before, though. There is an amendment that would give the Wisconsin Supreme Court direct jurisdiction over cases involving Foxconn in southeast Wisconsin. So essentially what that would mean is that the Wisconsin Supreme Court would handle appeals of circuit court rulings on Foxconn, and that any lower court, you know, circuit court orders involving the company would be automatically stayed pending appeal. That is, they'd be put on hold. So the Supreme Court would be given, the state Supreme Court would be given, you know, an unusual amount of power in a case involving a private company here, and that court is currently dominated 5-2 by conservatives as a very business-friendly court.
You use the word unusual. I've never heard of that happening. I guess that doesn't mean it hasn't happened, but this is not standard operating procedure.
No, I mean, it's new enough that I haven't had a chance to go out there and look and see if there's other examples where this has been done for a private company in Wisconsin or elsewhere. I mean, this is like the type of thing that happens in a redistricting case, for example. A lower court reaches a decision, it's appealed directly to the Supreme Court because it's, you know, it's a matter involving another branch of government. Those are types of issues that kind of by their definition affect all the people of a state. This is, you know, much more specific. It's giving that direct appeal and the power to, you know, immediately stay a lower court ruling to Foxconn.
I'm sure we'll be talking about that a lot more in the days to come. Sean, I want to move on to transportation, though. As you mentioned, the big sticking point. Do we see a compromise in the works?
It sounds like it. And, you know, from what the co-chairs of the legislature's budget committee said, it's not exactly a long-term solution that they were looking for. And they both used the word unprompted. They used the word disappointing or disappointed when it comes to the transportation budget, because John Nygren and Alberta Darling, who co-chair the legislature's budget committee, were looking for some type of a long-term transportation fix. Nygren said pretty much his exact quote actually was that they weren't going to have they weren't going to come up with a long-term solution on transportation. He said that was disappointing. There's no increase in the gas tax to pay for roads. There's no increase in the vehicle registration fee. They had talked about a fee on heavy trucks that would have generated substantial new revenue to pay for roads. That's not going to be in there. The budget does continue to borrow, although it sounds like it's going to borrow about $410 million, which is, you know, it's historically low. However, without new revenue, that's still going to pile on to the state's long-term transportation debt. So that's, you know, essentially leaving some of the same issues that had lawmakers kind of at each other's throats at times during this budget cycle. Those will exist for the next budget, too, under this plan.
We'll leave it there for now, Sean, but we'll keep covering this news. Thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome.
At WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson giving us an update on what's gone on in the legislature's budget writing committee today. We'll get a full update tomorrow with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White. Now, Attorney General Jeff Sessions made this announcement earlier today.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded. The DACA program was implemented in 2012 and essentially provided a legal status for recipients for a renewable two-year term, worker authorization, and other benefits, including participation in the Social Security program, to 800,000 mostly adult illegal aliens.
Priscilla Alvarez joins us now to talk about the end of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program and what happens next. She's an assistant editor at The Atlantic. Priscilla, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hi, good afternoon.
Remind us who was initially affected by DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program.
So there are roughly 800,000 undocumented immigrants who came to the United States as children illegally that are beneficiaries of the program right now. So we're talking about hundreds of thousands who have some sort of protections that were initiated with this executive action in 2012 that keeps them from being deported. It also, importantly, allows them to work. So we're also talking about work permits here. It allows them to work in the country legally.
And as one of the conditions to participate in DACA, as I understand it, they had to have no criminal record. The only criminal part would be, I guess, on their parents' part for bringing them across the border illegally.
That's right. And there are a few other requirements as well. They had to be under the age of 16 and live in the country continuously since 2007.
And we heard Attorney General Sessions there say it covers 800,000 mostly adult illegal aliens. They might be adults now, but at the point where they were covered, I guess, under DACA, they were children.
Yes, that's right as well. So that's where we go back to them having to be under the age of 16 when they applied. But yes, a large majority of the DACA recipients that we're talking about now are in their 20s.
So what happens to them now?
So right now, what happens is they have the chance to renew. If their permits will expire by March 5th, 2018, then they can still renew by October 5th. So the renewals happen in two-year cycles. So if they renew now, apply for that renewal, get that renewal, they'll still have two more years under the program. So we would see a vast majority expire in 2020. Still, we could still see some expirations in March. So those who do not expire, those who come after this timeline, those permits would expire in March. So that's the first time we're going to see that. But there are still, thousands that will see their permits expire. The DHS officials were giving some of those figures today. If I recall correctly, there was a little over 200,000 who will see their permits expire between August and December of this year. And of those, a little over 55,000 have already applied for renewal. So I would imagine that we'll see that number go up before October 5th. But that's where the state of play is right now.
Getting back to the announcement from the Attorney General, he also highlighted how DACA was implemented back in 2012.
The policy was implemented unilaterally to great controversy and legal concern after Congress rejected legislative proposals to extend similar benefits on numerous occasions to this same group of illegal aliens. In other words, the executive branch, through DACA, deliberately sought to achieve what the legislative branch specifically refused to authorize on multiple occasions. Such an open-ended circumvention of immigration laws was an unconstitutional exercise of authority by the executive branch.
And that was the same argument, Priscilla, from some state attorneys general who said today was a deadline before they would take legal action over what they said was this constitutional violation. Has this been the argument against DACA from the start?
Yes, it's been the argument since President Obama announced it on June 15th, 2012. We've seen immigration hardliners and Republicans say that this was an overreach of executive authority from the start. And so it was a large expectation, especially after Trump campaigned on this last year, that he would actually resign the program on day one. Clearly, that didn't happen. We're roughly 8 months into his administration when he made that decision. And what you heard from Sessions and what what we saw with the Texas Attorney General and a few other Republican state attorneys general, they were sort of forcing Trump's hand to come and take action on this program that they had largely seen as unconstitutional. And again, this isn't the first time that DACA has met legal challenges. We also saw this a few years ago with lower courts, and later last year, the Supreme Court came down with a 4-4 ruling, which actually kept DAPA, which was for the parents of U.S. Citizens and lawful residents, from taking effect. That would have, protected those parents, and keeping the, or at least blocking, I should say, the extension of DACA. So we've seen this sort of argument play out in the courts, and what we saw in this case was them avoiding that that possibility of having to go to court, in which case we'd likely see a Justice Department having to defend it.
We're talking to Priscilla Alvarez right now from The Atlantic, looking at the announcement today that the DACA program will end. We'll get into what Congress might do about that in response. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think should happen to the 800,000 people who were brought here as children without legal status by their parents? Should they be allowed to stay in their kind of current gray area, maybe given a path to citizenship, or do you support deportation? Are you or is someone in your family affected by this? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with Priscilla Alvarez from The Atlantic, looking at the end of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA, announced earlier today by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this announcement? What do you think Congress should do in response? Does this affect you? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Priscilla, before we go to our callers, I want to get into Congress now. A lot of reaction from individual members of Congress. The president stated on Twitter, "Congress, get ready to do your job, DACA." What are we looking at now in Congress when it comes to these 800,000 people affected by this change?
Legislation targeting this segment of the undocumented population, that's to say children who are brought to the U.S. illegally, usually receives bipartisan support by and large. It's fallen short, though, on several occasions. One of the first times we saw this was the DREAM Act. It was a measure introduced in 2001 that would have allowed some of these undocumented immigrants to eventually gain legal status. But time and again, it's come and gone. So this is a big, daunting task for Congress. Precedent is that it falls short in the end because of infighting or lack of a consensus. So not only are they tackling this, but they're also tackling tax reform, Harvey relief, raising the debt ceiling, averting a government shutdown. So these are a lot of items that Congress is going to have to deal with. In this case, they have 6 months to do it, but it's certainly going to be difficult, and it'll be something worth keeping an eye on.
Let's go to our callers now. Sandy is on the line in Mineral Point. Sandy, hi.
Hi. So I really feel quite badly for the people who are on the DACA program because it's not their fault that they were brought to this country illegally. And this is the only country they've ever known. If Congress had actually gone ahead and done their job and gotten this settled back when Obama was still the president, we wouldn't be in this mess right now, and all these people's lives would be settled. And I think it's really, I praise President Obama for doing what, for putting together DACA, and I think Congress needs to get off their you-know-whats and do their job.
Sandy, thanks for the call. And Priscilla, we've seen similar responses from a lot of Democratic members of Congress, some Republicans as well, and protests around the country today with similar views to Sandy's. Is that going to create enough momentum to do something over the next 6 months?
It's certainly possible. And you're right. This is an argument that you see on both sides of the aisle. This group of individuals is largely seen as a sympathetic group. They did not come here of their own volition, and that is something that is recognized on both sides of the aisle. Again, what the issue is going to be here is consensus. Are Republicans going to try to trade this for something else? Could it be border wall funding? Could it be another piece of legislation that would drastically reduce legal immigration, like the RAISE Act? So it's going to be thinking through those, debating those, that will ultimately decide the fate of this legislation.
Thanks for that call, Sandy. Let's go next to Roger in Green Bay. Roger, hi.
Hello. Yes, my position is that I'm glad the president took the action that he took in rescinding that executive order. I agree with Attorney Sessions' position that nobody is saying these children are bad people. Nobody's saying they're evil. But the fact of the matter is they are trespassing. They are illegal aliens, and they need to be sent back to their home country because that's the most we can do to try to put things right. I'd like to very briefly use a very fast analogy. What if I had a piece of property up north in Wisconsin, and I didn't go there for 5 years? And then I come to find out that for 4.5 years, a family has been squatting there. Do the children get to stay somehow? And the answer is no. One final note. These countries, these are not bad countries. Mexico, Argentina, whatever. These countries have a lot of successful people living there, and these young people can go there, take what they've learned here in America, and they have every opportunity to make a wonderful life. And
so, Roger, I want to jump in so we have time for more calls, but thank you for calling. And Roger, making the case that the Attorney General did, compassion or not, there's a principle of rule of law at stake here. Priscilla.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And we're hearing that, again, you heard it from Sessions. Trump himself said this on the campaign trail. But we're also talking about 800,000 undocumented immigrants here that are beneficiaries of the program. So that is a large number to suddenly leave eligible for deportation. So that is something that they're trying to find a permanent solution to. How do you deal with this group of people? Are there protections that we can provide, and you know what are those next steps look like?
Thanks for the call, Roger. We're talking to Priscilla Alvarez from The Atlantic about the end for now of DACA. And back to your calls now. John is on the line in Tomahawk. John, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, John?
I want to bring up a point that I really haven't heard properly discussed from the liberal side of the aisle coming at the conservatives, and that would be kind of the economic aspect and the economic impact of taking these 800,000 immigrants and forcing them out of the country. It's my understanding that in many cases, these people on the DACA program are paying Social Security. They're working in the country legally. They are paying taxes. And they're really becoming citizens. Well, they're not. There's no path for that. But they're becoming contributors to our society. And there's this view that these people are taking away from our economy, from our society, and they're contributing. They're paying into Social Security. They're paying income taxes.
I got you, John. And Priscilla, the business community, many business leaders are making a similar case to John that, hey, we're relying on these people to boost the economy.
That's true. Remember that they get work permits to work legally in the country that can be renewed every 2 years. So these are people that have been consistently, as long as they continue to qualify, contributing to the economy. There was recently a study that noted that when these permits expire, we're talking about 1,400 people losing their jobs each day who have benefited off of this program and are working legally in the country. So this is something that I think in the future we'll start to see more of how exactly it'll impact the economy as those expirations happen, that is, barring any sort of legislation that Congress might pass.
John, thanks for that call. Priscilla, let's talk about enforcement. The Trump administration had said even as DACA fades out, The people who are protected by it are not going to be enforcement priorities. Is that something that is going to be comforting for people in this situation, though, that maybe they won't be at the top of the list for deportation?
ICE officials told reporters today that they are going to continue to address and acknowledge Dreamers, which is another name given to DACA recipients, the same way that they were, they have been historically. That's to say that they are protected from deportation. They also said that they are going to use the same thought in looking specifically for criminals versus those who aren't, et cetera. Now, this is something that ICE officials, DHS officials are saying that they stand by. But what we've seen sometimes on the field is that some of these people do get caught up in deportations. And that is what we're going to be sort of looking for, is those stories of what actually happens on the field amid an environment of a crackdown of illegal immigration.
We'll leave it there for now. Priscilla, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Priscilla Alvarez. She's an assistant editor at The Atlantic. You can find her article about the end of the DACA program over on the Central Time Facebook page. You can join the conversation while you're there, or you can tweet us with your thoughts at Central Time WPR.